Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, here we are. And good morning. It's Wednesday, the 10th of August, the day after the primary election in Wisconsin. We now know who is on the ballot, and we now know who is on the ballot in all the races. There was nothing that was too close to call. The winners were the winners, same as they've always been in Wisconsin after an election day. Welcome to Wisconsin's Coffee Break. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Luke Mathers is here. You can reach the show at 715-388-7155 or email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. I guess the headline to start with, the way that I put it in my story for Up North News, the headline reads as such: Connecticut businessman Tim Michaels will run for Wisconsin governor after defeating Rebecca Clefish. Tim Michaels, the wealthy Connecticut businessman with no elected experience, scattershot Wisconsin residency, and the endorsement of a twice impeached and legally challenged former president, will be the Republican Party nominee, attempting to unseat Democratic Governor Tony Evers in November. Tuesday's primary win by Michaels, who reportedly spent at least $10 million of his own funds in his brief but rapid rise, brings a once high-flying Rebecca Clefish, the former lieutenant governor, crashing to earth as her party embraces the extremism that also nearly brought down the Wisconsin Assembly Speaker on Tuesday night. But let's start with the governor's race. With more than 95% of the estimated vote counted, Michael's lead over Clefish is 5 points, 47% to 42%. That's a margin of about 37,000 votes out of nearly 700,000 cast by Republican primary voters statewide. Clefish actually topped Michaels in the counties all around Milwaukee and Madison and Green Bay and Wausau. But if you look at the other 60-some counties as a percentage of each county's vote, the margin in each county, Michaels absolutely pummeled Clefish all across rural Wisconsin. There were also a handful of primaries in legislative districts. None had the attention or election night drama of the 63rd Assembly District, where Speaker Robin Voss narrowly defeated right-wing challenger Adam Steen by about 250 votes out of some 10,000 votes that were cast. Voss, as you know, had tried to cast doubts on the certified results of the 2020 presidential election, even authorizing a very costly Keystone Cops-like probe from former state Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman. But still, Voss was not seen by supporters of former President Donald Trump as aggressive enough in trying to overturn your votes, the will of Wisconsin voters. And Gableman himself, in a late surprise, supported Adam Steen, Voss's opponent. So when Voss was asked after he declared victory about Michael Gableman afterwards, Voss referred to Gableman, he called him an embarrassment to the state. That's one way to, I mean, talk about a bad hire. You hired this guy. You announced that he was going to do this impartial investigation, but you announced it at the Republican State Convention in 2021. And all you've done is cost taxpayers more than $1 million. Multiple court cases where you, Speaker Voss, have been found in contempt, or Gableman was found in contempt for withholding records that belong to the public. Sounds a lot like a president and records down at Mar-a-Lago. So, you know, apples don't fall far from the tree. And now Voss is saying, you know, Gableman's an embarrassment. If only there were somebody who could do something about that. If only the guy who hired Gableman, who is now, you know, newly emboldened by winning his primary election, might have the testicular fortitude to do something about this. We'll just have to see what Robin Voss does with Michael Gableman. Back to our gubernatorial race here. Again, this fever that's been spreading across the right side of the political spectrum, both Michaels and Clefish falsely claimed that the 2020 presidential election was rigged, a lie that Trump has been pushing in an effort to overturn his loss to Biden. But, you know, Michaels first said that decertifying the 2020 results, which again is not a thing, he said that that was not a priority. But then with Trump's endorsement and coming to Wisconsin, Michaels switched. He flip-flopped and said, well, everything is on the table. And of course, he is still talking about dismantling the bipartisan Wisconsin Elections Commission. So Michaels' message will feature a lot of tough on crime rhetoric. He's the one who one of his first ads had to say, you know, it's not racist to criticize, you know, illegal immigrants. It's the old, you know, I'm not a racist, but that your uncle would say. But despite that tough on crime rhetoric, he would not have any of that tough talk about whether President Trump has broken the law. Instead, he referred to the search warrant execution at Mar-a-Lago as, quote, overzealous prosecution at the Trump estate. Meanwhile, it is Michael's own estate that will raise questions over the next 90 days. It was reported by a conservative news outlet back in May that Michaels has spent much of the past 9 years living in both a New York City penthouse and a $17 million mansion in Connecticut, where his children were all attending high school. So walking a precise legal line, Michaels has reacted by claiming he had Wisconsin residency for at least 183 days a year in 8 of those past 9 years in order to still vote and pay taxes in Wisconsin, even though his wife claimed less than a year ago their Connecticut home when she was making a political donation. So there's a lot we're going to have to say about the governor's race, about what Governor Evers has done and said, what Tim Michaels is saying that he will do. And then we have an entire Senate race to talk about now that it's official, Mandela Barnes taking on Republican incumbent Ron Johnson. And more results and reaction all on the way. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll be right back. Here we are on a Wednesday morning, a gorgeous, gorgeous Wednesday across Wisconsin. We will be in the upper 80s by and large across the state today, and then lower 80s for Thursday and Friday. And what that means for all of you amateur meteorologists out there is that a, you know, quote unquote, cold front is coming through, just, you know, just enough to drop the temps a few degrees, which always means when that little front comes through, you know, it brings with it the chance of a spotty or a stray shower. So I can tell you when that will happen. I'll let you know. It's whenever I'm driving my open Jeep, you know, around someplace, because like I said, I've already been caught in one downpour with it. So, you know, why wouldn't a stray shower happen again? Like a little black rain cloud following me and my little Wrangler. We were talking before the break, sticking with the governor's race at this point, because Tim Michaels defeated Rebecca Clefish. And some of the things that people will be talking about, no matter what Michaels wants to talk about, no matter what Evers wants to talk about, you know, everybody's got a voice to add to this. And we talked before the break about Michaels' residency and whether, you know, somebody who has spent most of the past 9 years in Connecticut and New York City is really in touch with Wisconsin, especially somebody who has no elected experience. It's yet another case of somebody who thinks that by virtue of them being a wealthy business owner, that qualifies them to run a state, or in Ron Johnson's case, to be a state senator, or in Donald Trump's case, to run a country. And in all three cases, cultivating this image as a self-made man, when it was in fact their father or father-in-law who started the company, and then they had to, you know, they kind of were born on third base and thought that they hit a triple. So Michael's company is very large. It does many hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer-funded work on state roads. And while Michaels has said he would step away from the company, it is still a family business, and you can't completely detach yourself from, you know, the benefits of the family business. Again, one need only look at one Donald J. Trump, who, you know, said all the things about, you know, stepping away, turning it over to his kids. His kids would have nothing to do with the presidency. And instead, you know, both of them melded perfectly in a way that, you know, brought more money to him and his family, and, you know, brought their influence, that corporate influence, into, you know, the public sector. So, yes, Michaels said he does expect that the family business will continue to seek state business, including big contracts that have to be signed off by a governor. So Michaels would have to sign those contracts, too. So this person who says he's a political outsider is in every Republican candidate's Rolodex. He's a familiar presence on donor lists. And let's not forget, although he wants you to, this is not his first rodeo. He ran statewide before. It's just that it was quite a while back, 2004. He was the Republican nominee and ran against Russ Feingold and lost. So we have somebody who is going to certainly continue the Trump rhetoric, if you will, who's going to continue to attack Evers, attack immigrants, attack crime as some kind of an epidemic, when, as we've already indicated, you know, 8 out of 10 Wisconsinites, you know, say it's not a major issue to them. Evers, on the other hand, is going to make voting and elections a focus of his campaign. He's going to tell voters he's the only candidate who will actually, you know, defend democracy, and that he, or the campaign released a statement that called Michaels, quote, the most extreme and divisive nominee possible, one that will tell Donald Trump anything just to keep his endorsement. So we know who's going to be running at the top of the ticket for state office. What was more interesting and less certain by every stretch was who's going to be number two on those tickets, because in Wisconsin, the lieutenant governor post is elected separately rather than having the gubernatorial candidates choose a running mate. So Evers did not know until last night that he will be paired with State Assembly Rep Sarah Rodriguez, who won the Democratic lieutenant governor's primary, and Michaels will be on the ballot with State Senator Roger Roth. So we now know who the candidates are there. If I'm not mistaken here, Luke, we can get to hear from Tim Michaels now about, you know, some of the things that he said in his victory speech last night. And, you know, then we'll in our next segment, we'll turn our attention to the Senate race. But Tim Michaels, for example, talked about what he said would be his number one priority if he were to be elected on November 8th.
From my first day in office to my very last day as governor, jobs and the economy are going to be my number one priority.
Okay. Jobs and the economy. I'm wondering if he will make a specific number pledge the way that Scott Walker pledged to create so many jobs. Let's see if he learned the lesson not to do that. He probably won't, because, you know, Michael says he's not going to get into the politics as usual, even though he did run for statewide office before. Here's what he said about, you know, that he's not your typical politician.
Everywhere I go, people come up to me and they say, Tim, I'm so happy that you got into this race. I am ready for a change. I'm tired of politics as usual.
Oh, okay. Well, newsflash. Everybody is tired of politics as usual. And frankly, everybody's tired of what politics as usual has morphed into in this day and age. I think some people would actually like to go back to what politics as usual used to be like, if it gets rid of things like, you know, insurrection and violent rhetoric, you know, about starting a civil war, what have you. But this is what we're going to get for the governor's race for the next 90 days. It's going to be till November 8th. All right, let's turn our attention now to the U.S. Senate race, because again, it was essentially a foregone conclusion when Mandela Barnes cleared the field. The three other major candidates all dropped out of the race, endorsed Barnes, and saw him as the strongest challenger to take on Ron Johnson, who had promised 6 years ago that if you elected him for a second term, he would not run for a third term. He would term limit himself. Ron Johnson is running for a third term, and he has not term limited himself, and so he will be running against Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. And as I said on the radio last night with my crew on some of these stations, Barnes knows that he has to walk a line. It is extremely tempting to go with the red meat. And Ron Johnson provides a grocery cart full of the red meat. If you saw Mandela Barnes pushing that cart through the grocery store in his ad, that's a lot of, you know, the red meat he would like to throw at Ron Johnson. While at the same time, he's got to show you he knows how much the meat costs in the grocery store. He knows, you know, how much a gallon of milk is. And he's got to have that message that, you know, again, is true to his working class roots. But that didn't stop him from slamming his GOP rival in his victory remarks last night.
Unfortunately, we still have one senator who wants to take us backwards.
And why? Well, because of things like healthcare, even his vote on insulin. Luke, let's play those next two sound bites from Barnes.
We know that Ron Johnson may say a lot of crazy things, but the reality is what he's doing in Washington is no joke. It's downright dangerous. We're talking about a person who's made millions from special interests while he still wants to repeal the Affordable Care Act. He wants to slash Social Security, Medicare. Won't even vote to cap the cost of insulin.
And that is, that and much more is what he's going to be saying about Ron Johnson. But he also, you know, did note the moment. This is not a small thing that, you know, a black man has been nominated to run for the United States Senate. And he was happy to acknowledge that moment.
I don't fit the bill of what a normal politician should look like. But I've learned that is not a bad thing. That is a good thing.
Well, it is, because again, it gets to where are you from? What's your background? What are your roots? What are your values? And if we can have a campaign that focuses on that, then we will have made great strides indeed. But I do want to make note of some of the reaction to his victory and the victory of two other black candidates for assembly in the Milwaukee area by one of our guests tomorrow, Angela Lang from BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing Communities. And she tweeted last night, "Can we stop talking about quote unquote electability when it comes to black candidates? Folks have been humbled and proven wrong tonight," she writes. "Find a different excuse to not to want for a black man, because electability or lack thereof is no longer a reason." So I am very much looking forward to hearing more from Angela Lang about that tomorrow as well. Hey, we will also get reaction tomorrow from Congressman Mark Pocan. We're going to talk to him on two different matters. One will be his thoughts on, you know, the primary results and what are we looking at for the general election campaign yet to come. And we're talking to Congressman Pocan tomorrow because on Friday, the House will be voting on final passage of the Inflation Reduction Act and sending that on to President Joe Biden for his signature. So we'll talk about the elements that are in the act and what it is about Ron Johnson and other Republicans that could not bring themselves to vote, if not for the bill, at least for the cap on insulin prices that Mandela Barnes was just talking about. What was so difficult about that? A couple of other results we want to get to. One was a bit of a surprise, and that was the race for state treasurer. And I'm just reaching back for the results here now, where in the primary, there were the Democratic primary, I should say, there were three candidates. And Pat, you can find it here. We talked to one of the candidates last week, Angelina Bettino. But I'm looking now because I want to set up Aaron Richardson, who was the winner.
Jillian Bettino was on. You said Angela Bettino.
Jillian Bettino. I'm sorry. See, that's what happens when you, again, there are more tabs open on this computer than all the rest of you combined. And sometimes that means you don't find the thing that you want to find when you want to find it right away. And that is exactly what we're saying about state treasurer. So I'm just going to say that Aaron Richardson won, and I wanted to play a soundbite from him at the state Democratic convention. Because I did record several of the candidates just to hear what some of their priorities were. And Aaron Richardson is the mayor of Fitchburg. And so he talked about a program that he has helped start there in terms of home affordability. And another priority that sounds like a right thing to have for a state treasurer, financial literacy. Here's some of what Aaron Richardson had to say.
A couple of things I'm very passionate about. Number one is homeownership. Something that we're doing in Fitchburg is a rent-to-own program where people are going to be able to rent condos from the city. We're going to have about 8 to 10 the city buys. And then a portion of their rent goes towards a down payment. So in 7 to 10 years, they can actually purchase that from the city, and they can start generating generational wealth. And then we are really changing people's lives. Financial literacy is another thing that's incredibly important to me, and that's something that I'm going to work with people to provide financial literacy for people throughout the state as well.
So that again was Aaron Richardson, who won over Jillian Bettino and Angelina Tenorino. He got 38% of the vote. Jillian Bettino, 36%. Tenorio, 25%. We'll take a break, talk about the third congressional district race and more in just a bit. You're up north.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Kick the dust up.
Hey, speaking of that website, upnorthnewswi.com, go there, if you would, please. Click on the word newsletter up in the top banner and subscribe to the nice little product that that I put together with our team each weekday to tell you more about what's been going on. For those of you who did vote in the primary, good for you. It looks like, looking at a tweet from Scott Bauer of the Associated Press, that turnout was about 28% compared to 23% 4 years ago. So 28% of you, well done. The other 72%, people, what's it going to take? These are big, important races. So the flogging will continue until morale improves. Luke, you just reminded me that go ahead. I'm sorry. You were going to say something.
Dane County had like 38%. So Dane County had fairly decent turnout when it came to the primary yesterday.
Well, that's still 62% that didn't. So they're still on my list as well.
I understand. I just want to point out that the Dane County is bringing up those numbers, not bringing them down. That's all.
I hear you. Okay. You were telling me before that when we were talking about Robin Voss squeaking out a win, that, you know, he was asked about Michael Gableman and other matters. You've got a little clip of what he had to say last night. Here it comes. And well, if that doesn't say I might have made a bad hire, I don't know what does. But here's the thing. It sets up a very interesting caucus. We've just seen statewide what Republican voters are doing, and they have narrowly chosen to go with the Trumpism, the big lie, everything else. What's that caucus going to be like next week? You know, Robin Voss may think he's going in there and, you know, wagging his finger, you know, because he has controlled that caucus for many years, and that members will say, yes, sir, and all vote, because it is a caucus vote to get rid of Mike Gableman. Robin Voss may just find out next week that the tide has turned and that he no longer has, you know, a vote of confidence from the Republicans who make up the Republicans in the Assembly caucus there. So now we know. But if you would at least, Luke, play that first sentence again and then put that on a loop, I'd appreciate that. We'll need it. There we go. Okay. So we'll just keep that. Yeah. There. Thank you. Now, meanwhile, we have Governor Evers has already been spotted with his running mate, Sarah Rodriguez, state assembly rep. They kicked things off with a little breakfast at Monty's Blue Plate Diner in Madison, which, if memory serves me right, I believe 4 years ago, again, when Evers did not know who his running mate would be until after the election, he and his new running mate, Mandela Barnes, 4 years ago met, I want to say, is it Mickey's Dairy Barn Dairy Bar?
Dairy Bar, yeah.
Dairy Bar?
Right next to Madison. Camp Randall in Madison.
Yes.
This one's a little bit more the east side, but I believe you're correct. I think it was Mickey's 4 years ago and Monty's now this morning. Molly Beck over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is reporting that about five minutes ago.
This is, if you don't want to talk issues and you just want to talk about why you should vote for somebody based on lifestyle choices, here's why you go with Tony Evers. He goes to breakfast at diners and coffee shops. You know, he goes and tips people who are working very hard to serve up, you know, some fried eggs and bacon. And I say that only because I'm just one of those extremely pro breakfast people. I'm in the kitchen at 5 o'clock, you know, at least five mornings a week, whipping out some kind of a hot breakfast. And then on the sixth, if I can go over to the Chippewa Family Restaurant or someplace else, I'm a breakfast person in the morning. So I'm happy to again see Governor Evers is doing that much for us. All right, let's get to the third congressional district next. And if you'll forgive me, I am again going to move a bunch of tabs out of the way because I swear I brought up the results. We already know it was Brad Paff. I just wanted to get you the exact. Here we go. All right. So Brad Paff, I wanted to look at the county map here and talk about it. Brad Paff, with the endorsement of retiring Democratic Congressman Ron Kind, won Tuesday's primary. 99% of the estimated vote has been counted, and Paff has 39% of the vote, compared to Rebecca Cook at 32% and Deb McGrath at 19%, Mark Newman at about 11%. If you look at that from a margin standpoint, Paff got 24,000 votes and Rebecca Cook 19,000 votes. So about 5,000 votes separated them. When you look at the county map, Brad Paff did extremely well in the heart of the 3rd Congressional District, in that entire La Crosse area. Including, you know, Trempealeau and Jackson and La Crosse counties and Vernon and such. Rebecca Cook did well on the fringes of all the district, Eau Claire, Chippewa, Pierce Pepin, you know, parts of Wood, Portage and others. And then Deb Baldus McGrath did well in her home county of Dunn County. But it will be Brad Paff going up against, you know, insurrectionist observer, at least insurrectionist adjacent, Derek Van Orden, in what will be, I mean, look, you think the races for Senate and governor are going to be nasty? Brad Paff, you know, is your quintessential nice guy. This is not going to be a nice race. So one last time, let's listen to Brad Paff sounding like a nice guy that he is, because for both him and Van Orden, the gloves are coming off after this. But here's what Brad told me at the state convention a couple of weeks back.
You know, people here in western and central Wisconsin, they know me. They know I've had the opportunity to work on their behalf. First with U.S. Senator Herb Kohl, then with Congressman Ron Kind. Had the opportunity to spend 8 years at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and I had the opportunity to lead the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They know that I've always put their interests first. They know that I understand their communities. I understand a rural way of life. They know that I will continue to always put their interests first.
So that's Brad Paff, the nominee for the Democrats in the 3rd Congressional District. Now over to State Attorney General, where much like the state treasurer's race, the candidate that spent the most money did not win. In this case, Eric Toney is going to be the nominee, and he defeated Adam Jarko and Karen Mueller. Toney had 37% to Jarko's, well, about 37. Let me say that again. Toney at 37.5%, Jarko at 37%, and Karen Mueller at 25%. So it was a very close race that Eric Toney pulled off.
Yeah.
Sorry, Luke, I see you. You get so close to the microphone sometime, shut up and let the nice young man talk.
I'm sorry. But Daniel Bice pointed out last night, because I, like you, I scroll on Twitter just nonstop. And so I had one earphone in listening to election coverage of right here on Civic Media for Bull Falls, Devil Radio in Madison, and the Shaw in Waukesha. And I was just scrolling on Twitter outside of that. And Daniel Bice put out there, the surprise of the night is Attorney General candidate Karen Mueller. And then he put in parentheses, R. Ivermectin. was how he classified her. Not a Republican, but a Republican for
not
ivermectin.
Not from Chippewa Falls. Yeah. No, but from ivermectin world, yes.
She's going to finish third out of the three candidates in the GOP primary, but she already had 91,000 votes with a third of the vote outstanding. So she received so many votes, and she was one of the individuals that brought a lawsuit against the state in 2020 trying to overturn the state's election results. And so, like, that was the third place finisher, almost 100,000 votes, maybe more after Daniel Bice's tweet, but that's the screenshot that I had. Or snapshot in time that I had of Bice reporting on that third place finish.
Right. And again, not somebody that the conspiracy theorists, you know, were not laughed out of the party last night, neither in Wisconsin nor last week in other states. Some of them won, some of them lost, but many of them had a very strong showing.
A ton of them won in Minnesota. Our neighbors to the west had a ton of pretty crazy candidates received the GOP nominations for attorney general, I believe lieutenant governor, and a handful of positions in Minnesota that just, it's pretty troubling right now to see who's winning some of these primaries.
So just as troubling to us in a story that we shared from July 11th at Up North News, was some reporting that was done by the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism about Eric Toney, the Republican nominee for attorney general. It shows that basically Toney, as Fond du Lac County District Attorney, came to charge a woman with felony voter fraud simply for mistakenly registering with the address where she gets her mail. And Toney, wanting to make a name for himself by, you know, perpetuating these attacks on election integrity, has upended this woman's life, cost her thousands of dollars so that he can run on a platform supported by Donald Trump with lies about widespread voter fraud. And ironically, this wasn't, a Democratic voter that Toney went after. Eric Toney went after Jamie Wells, who said she wanted to register to vote because she wanted to vote for Donald Trump back in 2020. See, Wells and her husband are on the road most of the year. They live in a 42-foot camper. His work takes him to numerous farms all across the state. So their mail comes to a mail in a rental box at a UPS store in Fond du Lac. They've been doing that for 30 years. You know, I too at times in my campaigns have used the rented mailboxes at UPS stores. They are a great and convenient service. But when Wells needed to register to vote someplace, again, not having a permanent address, she thought that putting where the mailbox is was the right thing to do. It is not. You're not supposed to do it that way. But instead of, you know, simply taking that explanation, Eric Toney decided to charge her with felony voter fraud. So you had an assistant professor of political science at UW-Madison, Ian Main, saying that it's obviously for political reasons. It's abhorrent that a district attorney would publicly humiliate voters for making a mistake. It's a really tortured view, Main said, of what the provision in the statute means, and just really irresponsible. And so far, the legal bills for Jamie Wells have run close to $20,000. So Eric Toney is going to talk a lot about, election integrity in his race against Josh Call, the incumbent Democratic attorney general, and, you know, what we're going to have instead of a discussion on election integrity overall is a discussion about, you know, whether there was some prosecutorial misconduct involved in a district attorney bringing felony voter fraud charges, apparently to make a name for himself, you know, more than anything else. And, you know, upend one poor woman's life, who, by the way, again, registered to vote because she wanted to vote for Donald Trump in 2020. And look what that got her. The 29th Senate District around the Wausau area includes Marathon County, Rusk, Taylor, Sawyer, Clark, Wood County, parts of all of those. That was up because Jerry Petruski is not seeking another term. He is retiring. I want to pull up the exact numbers, and while I do, I'm going to tell you that the winner was Corey Tomczyk, or Tomczak, 59 years old, from Mosinee. a business owner, and based on an article in the Wausau Herald, an aficionado of cowboy hats. One of his very first complaints in his candidate questionnaire is that, you know, most Republicans are not Republican enough, and that he is very much a believer in the false claims made in the book 2000 Mules, or the movie 2000 Mules, that claims that drop boxes, you know, are used by so-called mules who are dropping off, you know, tons and tons of ballots from other people. When in fact, if we've learned nothing else from this year, the only election mule we know about is that Ron Johnson very nearly took fraudulent ballots to the vice president as part of Trump's effort to overturn the election. But Corey Tomchick will be the nominee for the Republicans, running against Bob Look on the Democratic side in the 29th Senate District. Let's take a break. We'll wrap up the hour here. Coming up next, you're up north.
From Stewart Avenue to Scott Street, your news, talk, and sports station is Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 FM and WXCO, 1230 AM.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Just give me all the bacon and eggs you have. Wait, wait. I worry what you just heard was, give me a lot of bacon and eggs. What I said was, give me all the bacon and eggs you have.
That seems extremely reasonable, and I don't see any problem with that line whatsoever. Breakfast lover Pat Kreitlow back here with Up North News for a Wednesday morning. There was one race that we did not get into yet, and that was for Secretary of State, which, again, in earlier times, wouldn't have been much to talk about at all. But we have to spend a couple of minutes on it because of what this campaign is going to look like and what the office could look like, depending on the results in November. First, on the Democratic side, we'll note that Doug La Follette, who has been Secretary of State for most of the time since the early 1970s, survived a primary challenge from Dane County Democratic Party Chair Alexia Saber. It's La Follette's victory that sets up a general election contest now with State Representative Amy Loudenbeck, who was the victor in a three-candidate primary on the Republican side. And again, normally that would be all the discussion that we have about it, but this particular campaign is going to focus on who should administer future elections. Obviously, La Follette is, you know, very content with the way things are because they work. Meanwhile, Republicans have been, you know, making noise about conceivably giving more election duties to the Secretary of State's office. It's not just here, but in other states where Republicans have looked for ways to consolidate power, and they can do that if they control the legislature and the governor's office. If all of that comes together, expect in Wisconsin and elsewhere that you will have the rules changed, and it will be a lot easier either for secretaries of state, you know, in cahoots with their legislature and governor, to either, you know, delay results, second guess results, bring legal challenges against results, refuse to certify the actual and verified results of counts and recounts, and all in all, do what they think is necessary to win elections by putting roadblocks between certain people, certain groups, certain parts of geography, and the ballot box. It is not, if we've learned nothing in the past couple of years, it is not alarmist to say that there is a real threat to democracy that comes, and it includes races like the once sleepy state Secretary of State's race, where Doug La Follette is now going to have to defend his very long tenure against Republican State Representative Amy Loudenbeck. Sports. I didn't get to watch the game much last night, but I am led to understand that Freddy Peralta, it says here he threw five strong innings. I'll have to take their word for it. There were great hits by Andrew McCutchen and Colton Wong, and apparently an amazing catch by Tyrone Taylor to rob a home run from Tampa. And you liked it. It was
such a good, the highlight was labeled Taylor went on a pogo stick, and that's essentially what he did. Like he jumped up and just grabbed it right from the wall, and Freddie just looked relieved and almost amazed that he prevented that home run from going out of the park.
That's awesome. I mean, and everybody loves a good, home run robbing catch. So I will definitely be checking the highlights later as the Brewers beat Tampa 5-3. And then they play again this afternoon, a very short two-game series on this getaway day. And the Brewers are getting away to St. Louis. They will have Thursday off, and then they will have a very critical series against the Cardinals at Busch Stadium Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And, like I said earlier in the week, I still think this is make or break. Luke is going to walk on the sunny side of all this and say there's still so many more games to play after this, but I don't know.
It's a long season. It's a really long season. I can't believe that if you're neck and neck for first place, which is where they still are. Yes, they lost the couple of game lead that they had on the Cardinals, but there's no make or break baseball if you can stay in a similar position like that in August. Talk to me at Labor Day, and then we'll start talking about make or break baseball.
Well, I mean, okay, but I mean, some teams are, pretty much mathematically out of it already, and others are stepping very close to the line
here. But the Brewers aren't that, though, is what I'm saying. Like, if they were where the Cubs are right now, I would say yes. Then every single game here to the rest of the...
That's one of the teams that I'm talking about. They should just go play golf now. I mean, that's honest to God, turn Wrigley Field into a putt-putt golf course right now. It would be better used than for the caliber of baseball that they are playing on the north side. I would be okay with that.
Bring in the goats is what you're saying?
Oh, I would. Can you imagine? What if we could get Katie Rosenberg, Wausau mayor, to make arrangements to have those goats delivered to Wrigley Field? Because,
I think that would institute a full-blown riot. Like, that would
riot. But again, the goats do good things. They gobble up invasive species, things that aren't wanted. And so maybe baseball suckage is one of those invasive species that the goats could do something about. They should try anything that they can at this point, given the season that they're having. Are the Brewers at that level? No, they can't possibly get there from here. My whole point is whether they can appear to be competitive for anything other than, say, a wild card game, and that's the thing. And if they get that, I mean, they're going to be demoralized because the wild card game, situation is just...
It's new this year. It's a series this year, actually.
Which, and thank goodness, because that single game was... It's just heartbreaking sometimes.
It is. But the interesting part of the wild card is you want the home field advantage for that one because you don't change stadiums. It's a three-game series now going to be played in whoever the higher seed is for that wild card matchup. So you don't get to go the back and forth of two games, one game, or however the rotating series is for the NL Central and the World Series.
Well, maybe for this year, but I can guarantee the wild card will be a 7-game series within a couple of years because there's almost no such thing. When I was growing up, Grandpa Pat's got a story to tell you. When we were growing up, the championship series was the best 3 out of 5, and then the World Series was the only one that was best of 7 games. And now everything is best of 7 except football. Football is the only one where it's do or die. And trust me, if they can get the College Bowl series to become, instead of a 2-game situation, if they can turn that into brackets, you'll see the NFL going to series, before you know it. It will happen. It really could.
March Madness, that's still one and done. That's March. The other one.
Well, with the promise of playing many, many multiple games, that if you keep winning, you get to play.
Sure.
So there is that. One last quick note that from Tim Michaels' campaign, While there was a ban on contributions to his campaign going forward, they will now accept contributions from individuals up to the legal limit of $20,000. Anybody want to see my shocked face? This is Up North News. We'll be back in our next hour after this.